Hi, my name is Roy Collin, and welcome to the show. I've also got Fight Podcast, The Awakening Podcast, Exposing Fraud and Corruption, but with Solutions, the Crypto Podcast, talking about all things blockchain, NFTs, crypto, the Meditation Podcast, talking about all different types of meditation, but there's also meditations there from 1 minute to 2 hours. And the other one's the Learn Polish Podcast. So if you're interested in learning Polish, you can do that. And the other one is Speaking with Roy Collin. And I just have guests from around the world talking about either public speaking or also about their book or just general life in general. And you find everything on bio.link/podcaster. I'm also a podcasting coach. And you see the QR code there. And it's also on my link as well. And if you're interested in actually going on some podcast shows, I'm helping people doing that. Or if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com. He helps people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. So be sure to check him out, danielpacker.com. I hope you enjoy this week's show. Welcome to the Meditation Podcast. You'll find all our episodes on meditationpodcast.org. My guest today, soul alignment guide, energy healer, intuitive life coach. You can see from our beautiful screen there if you're watching on Spotify, Rumble, YouTube, or BitChute, Rock Your Blocks with a beautiful logo. Please welcome Denise Michelli. Did I do it justice? Michelli, you said have that
Perfect.
Italian.
Yes. Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here and to share my journey with you today and hopefully help some people along the way.
Sure you will. So, I mean, I've kind of mentioned the kind of the bullet points, but you might kind of let the listeners know a little bit more about you.
Sure. So I have always been one to want to help others. I mean, that from the beginning. And I struggled in my childhood to, you know, to feel like I could really do that and feel good. And so I found meditation very young because I felt very different. I knew there was something, you know, else for me. And so, you know, just grew up in an Italian household that was very loud, passionate, a lot of, you know, a lot of, my parents got married very young, so they were, you know, by the time I was getting to be that age of adolescence, they were really struggling. And I had three other siblings as well. And so I began to look for ways to, you know, figure out who I was, because within the family, I became sort of the sage, you know, the one that everyone was coming to get some help, some support, a positive outlook. And I always just seemed to be that. So it just became my role. And so finding meditation, it was the book Transcendental Meditation, was powerful for me, because then I was able to go and replenish myself and go on to do many other things. And one of the fun stories I like to tell is how I went to Catholic school for 8 years, and during that time I can recall I have a picture of myself lying in the grass at recess in my uniform showing people how to meditate, you know, palms up, laying in Shavasana, and you know, breathing, you know, because it just, it was like, what is she doing over there, you know? But it was something that really helped me to, you know, find my center. And that's really stayed with me throughout my whole life. So, you know, oftentimes there's that poet Rumi, who says, it's one of my favorite quotes, the hole is where the light comes in. You know, when we have something in our life that challenges us, it's an opportunity. And that's where, you know, I feel that was my opportunity to find that light, to find this way that I could come back to myself, that I could begin to, you know, turn that adversity into something different. And so I, you know, began that journey in that way. And, you know, realized that, you know, I used to joke around and say, I don't know if they like mixed me up at the at the hospital, but I just felt so different. Like I was very studious, I was very I wanted to go to college. I went to college early. And when I told people I wanted to do that, they were like, my mom was like, why are you doing this to me? Like, they didn't want me to leave because they felt they needed me. And I wanted something more. Like, in my family, it was very, a very patriarchal model. Like, women were not supposed to want to go to college. You're supposed to get married and have babies. And it sounds very archaic, but that's just the expectation. The few women that worked in my family were in very traditional roles, like nurse, banker, teller, like just the, it was okay to do that, but, for a little while. And so I feel like, because I grew up in that environment and I did push the envelope, I did challenge sort of the status quo, there were parts of me that I didn't realize until much later in life that I had developed sort of like a people-pleasing sort of personality or set of behaviors that I used to, just make, I would always be making sure everyone was okay. And part of what I think happens with that, and that's where, to bring it all the way around to my work now, is that working with women who are going through transitions in life in 40s, 50s, 60s, and they are, and it could be younger as well, because, there's the world is obviously going through a lot right now, and the changes are very stressful. Everyone feels somewhat traumatized every day. But needless to say that, when you start to reflect back and see the patterns, that's where you know that the power of your subconscious mind, it really does hold on to everything that happened to you from age 0 to 7. And there is, good research out there saying that you are impacted even before you're born. You're impacted by what's going on with your parents, and so overview, that's the big picture of how, how this became my journey. And I, went through lots of different changes in my life, but always being able to use that, going back to the center, using a, and I've done all different types of meditation. I recommend that people don't just try one, because it, it changes over time, the kinds that might resonate with you. And if you try to stick with just one thing, you might want to quit because it doesn't always resonate or work. So
Exactly. And like you mentioned, like you were like a people pleaser, and I could see that with my mom all her life. And what I could see is a lot of people use that. They bring their problems to my mom, and then so they're kind of offloading it. They're taking it off their back and throwing it on them, which is great for them. But it's like
Yes.
then you've got the thought. You hear all of the terrible stories, and I mean, like you kind of keep it within because of confidentiality with the person whoever's telling you, but you end up having a lot of baggage just thrown on top of you.
Exactly. And it, and what it does over time, because it really took me a long time to realize it, because I had pushed the boundaries of like what the family and, generationally the expectations were. My great grandparents came over from Italy to Ellis Island, and they literally had nothing. So I really came from a very old school, old fashioned family model. And so by pushing back in certain areas, which for me was my education, I feel like almost those other parts got more cemented, because I, it was like I broke through one barrier, but then the part of me that was people pleasing was really much deeper than I realized. And what it attracts, and this is where, my current work in subconscious healing is, we're energetic beings. That's what we are. There's just, just, it's not even new information anymore. But when you have that energy about you, what are you going to attract in your life? And because you're operating on what happened to you most intensely, like more than 50% of us are walking around with that same programming from when we were a youngster. There's a quote that says, show me a boy, you know, age seven, and I'll show you the man. And it's been quoted by, so you know how that goes, it's like Aristotle or some Jesuit, you know. But the point being is, if you don't do this work, this inner work, you could stay with those subconscious motivations, those subconscious patterns operating without you really choosing it. Like up here in your conscious mind, you're like, no, I'm, you know, I do this and I meditate and I, you know, but then people will find, you know, even though I have these habits, like I end up with maybe relationships where I don't get my needs met, or, you know, jobs where I'm like, it's over people pleasing is how I've taken on the role. I don't have to do it that way, but you know, and that's sort of where I came to in my life in my 40s. I was like, what am I even doing here? You know, and, you know, it's so easy for us to point outward and say, oh, you know, it was this person or that person, or, you know, it was the boss or whatever. And that's what we want to do, right? We want to blame people or shift the responsibility. But what I began to realize through my, you know, my journey was that these were things that were still active in me. And so that's where during the pandemic, I became certified as a subconscious healer, because the power of it, you know, and I was talking about it like it's really new information, but this neuroscience has been looked at for since, you know, for quite a long time throughout history. There was an article I read that talked about it throughout history, but just in our day and age, the biology of, what is it? The biology of healing. I don't know. I just had the book open. Dr. Bruce Lipton. He was talking about this in the 60s. He was talking about this very thing, that our cells have consciousness, and that, you know, this whole idea, like people get all caught up in the idea that, you know, I have this gene for cancer, you know, and he's like, there is no gene for cancer. You know, their research is showing that it's what we think about. So having all these tests and doing all this preventative stuff, it's like, you know, if you are focused on it, it's what you create. And so I, you know, I realized that I spent a good part of my young adult life drawing into me the very thing I didn't want. So
I think we're all guilty of that, and even kind of repetitive patterns as well. Even in relationships, we tend to know what's not working, whether it's the narcissist or something, and then you just keep going through it. And you know, like, I know I went through a pattern of totally the wrong people, and it was somebody actually that I met that actually just made me conscious of it, and it just stopped. It's like the beauty of this is, like, once you kind of accept it and understand it, it doesn't have to be, because sometimes people are telling them the story, oh, that's just the way it is, that's just who I am, and they believe the story, and it's not. You can change anything.
Yes, and you know, it, you know, being wound up in it so much, and the pattern, even the pattern of just putting the responsibility or the blame outside of the self. And so when I talk about people pleasing, I explain how, like, over time I did become, and I'm not a depressed, you know, I think that people are either tend towards sadness or tend towards like anxiety. Like, it's like a continuum to me. Like, they're either focused on what didn't work in the past, so they get sad about it and can't really change it, or they're worried about the future, and it's a feeling of like, if I worry about it enough, will it actually change it? No, it really won't. The only thing we have control over is right now. Like you said, you can even in the moment have a deep insight and be like, I'm not doing that anymore. And it's been that simple for me in some ways, but also, you know, unraveling when you become so confused. And that's kind of where I got to in a career that I was in for 20 years, is that I started to just feel super sad before and after work. And I was like, what is going on here? And I really started to ask myself, are you, you know, because I was really good at the job. And that almost makes it harder, you know, and I think that's part of my personality, is to learn something really well, do it really well. It doesn't necessarily mean it's what you are called to or what feeds your soul, you know, and I started to realize that helping people was a big part of that job, but it was just the wrong environment for me to do it. And, you know, the deeper thing about that was, I was people pleasing 24/7. My relationships, my home life, my interactions at the school that I worked, and I think when you do that over time, what I've come to realize, because you hear so much about imposter syndrome, right? Well, imposter syndrome is becoming so disconnected with yourself that you don't know who you are. So of course you're going to doubt everything. You don't trust your decisions anymore because you're like, well, you got yourself here and you're not happy. So, so you'll have an idea and you're like, no, I can't do that. And so I began doing coaching while I was in that educational career on the side just to feed myself. And I was like, D, why are you doing this to yourself? Why are you trying to work 7 days a week? And it was because that was the thing, working with adults and working with one-on-one and coaching people and supporting people in getting healthier and feeling better. It was more of the work that I wanted to do. So eventually, through going inward, I was able to walk away from something that was very secure, very, like I could hear my parents in the background going, what? You're gonna, all of that, because they had done that to me over the years. Anytime I changed anything, it was like, oh, do you have benefits? Do you have, all of that panicky kind of talk about change, and I was able to find out, and it's again how you frame it, how you view it. Found out I could early retire. There was an answer within it for me that I could go and use all that 20 years that I put in and then go and create what I wanted to create. And so, and that's the beauty of like when people hear these stories, because that's just one of many where they go and they've worked with me, even in just a few sessions, where they get into the emotion that was attached to what is bothering them. And we just help them bring it down. It's an emotion that dates way back in most cases. They begin to see, you know what? I don't have to keep doing this job that is literally crushing my soul every day. And they'll come back to me months later and they're like, oh yeah, I quit that job and I'm working at a nonprofit, or, and it's just like, it feels like what I'm supposed to do, to just help inspire and motivate people that change does seem really hard and it gets at our, brings up all of our fears, but that's the sign that it is waiting for you. I try to tell people, like, look at the situation and turn it on its head, because there is a gem in this negative situation. There's a reason why it's so uncomfortable.
Like, there's a very high, when you have deep conversations with people, there's a very high percentage of people that hate their jobs. They like Sunday night,
Yes.
they can't sleep because they're worried about the week ahead. They live for the weekend. And unfortunately, I've come across a lot of people, even a good friend of mine. He was pushed into a career because his father thought this is the best career for you. Nothing to do with what he loved. And I know that happens a lot as well, whether sometimes if they're a solicitor, an accountant, a doctor, they think, oh, this is a good career, it's safe. And they make them go into this. And then the child who becomes an adult is afraid to disappoint the parent when they're miserable deep down, instead of realizing, hey, I have to look after me and start doing what I want. And unfortunately, society doesn't matter how much you're making. I mean, I have met consultant doctors who are up to their eyes in debt. Society's kind of built them that you get the bigger car, you get the bigger house, you might have the
Of
yacht or
course.
whatever, just to kind of, but the reality is you're better off having a little shed in a field and having freedom and doing what you love. It could be digging, planting a few carrots and things like that. But most people, and once they do it, they just, like, you never hear of anyone saying, I want to get back. Like, I've talked to accountants and just fellow accountants, and they hate it. They tell you, like,
Yeah.
they go, not don't like this, but they feel they're trapped. And I think when people kind of realize, hey, you can change this, and I think what you did as well, because unfortunately sometimes people, they're financially stuck in the kind of trap. Unfortunately, the way that it, the whole education system, everything is set up. But when you kind of make a little shift, you can do it to the side. I know it's harder when you're kind of doing the bit of work, but if you do something that you love, I bet you got way more energy from that than the other thing, because you just feel, and so it's not work. I mean, like, say, even with me with the pod, I'm doing a load of podcasts and I'm finding guests for people. I love it. It doesn't, it doesn't suck the energy out of me. So find something that gives you energy instead of takes it.
Exactly. And that's where, that dynamic of people pleasing, it's not always, it doesn't just show up in one way. Sometimes it's like you said, we're conditioned to believe we have to have that certain level of security, and our parents' like judgment of us or acceptance of us really dates back to when we were 3 or 4 years old. And I did so many different types of therapy, even as I mean as early as 16, I walked into a mental health clinic and I was like, help me. I was so overwhelmed by the intensity of what my parents would come and tell me. Literally, they were each coming to me with their problems with their marriage, and somehow I would always be able to soothe them and calm them, but like I it was starting to really impact me and confuse me. And by the age of 17, let me finish that story. I always go off on a tangent, but I told the counselor what was going on in like an hour, and she said, "Honey, your parents need to come in." There's something when you take on an entire, like I like to look at it, and I learned a lot about it through archetypes. That if you are a healer person, there's no other choice for you when you see suffering, right? So not only was I doing that for my parents, but I had a younger brother and sister, and I was shielding them, I was protecting them. And if I wasn't there to do that, there was a level of guilt, and then it got to a point where I think the adult side of us starts to develop around 15, 16, and we're like, this is not logical. I remember trying to argue logic with my mom, and she was very emotional, and so I would never get anywhere with that. But at some point, there something flipped in me, and I said, I have a right to be happy in my life. And all of the, I will leave the house and have the most positive day. And I even had a full-time job while I was in high school. Like I grew up very quickly. And I've always been that conscientious girl. And, but it filled me, to learn and to be out in the world and to see, wow, I ended up working in a French restaurant. And eventually led me to working as a chef. So I just embraced everything that came to me, but then I would go home and it would just be sucked out of me. And so that's when I said, you deserve to do what you want to do. And some friends of mine, and this is probably why I eventually became a teacher, because my teachers were seeing my work and saying things to me like, your writing is really deep, it's like this author. And I was like, are you talking to me? Like I was like, and so that's where that idea of imposter syndrome, you're not connecting with the person who you really are, but other people are seeing it. And then I had friends whose parents were, just different, they had different upbringing, whatever, but one was going for their last year of high school, one was going to France to study design, another was going, and I was like, I want to go somewhere and study something, So I was motivated externally, but yet at the same time, it was a way for me to say, there is no reason why I can't do these amazing things and be fed, more equally in life and not feel like I'm overgiving. So that overgiving pattern, even though like I got out and I did go to college early and I said I accidentally became a chef for a little while I was in college, which was really great and really rewarding and fun. It was just, the journey of having to face that down. And like you said, it can be as simple as just you wake up and you're like, I'm not doing this anymore. And I remember going to my guidance counselor and saying, I want to apply for early admission, which back then was pretty, pretty rare, at least in the US. And she said, honey, you're not a shoo-in for that. Well, there was, another person who helped me create this amazing resilience that I was growing, because I applied to four colleges and I got into three of them on that program. So she was judging me in some way, right? And so it's that, being able to look at the external forces in your life and say, do I have to be what is coming at me? And then how is my behavior attracting that? You know, and of course it took me years to really put that all together, but it's amazing how our families, our culture, you know, all of these external things really do put this pressure on us that, you know, we can't see it. We don't know in the moment where it's coming from, but that's where, you know, when people are unhappy like that for so long and following those old tapes, you know, I like to say that we have literally in our subconscious recordings of everything in our lives, and they can be pulled up just like that in any situation, you know.
And like, you know, with the guidance counselor, even teachers, the amount of times that they rob people of their dreams, and like some people, they give them the power, they look up to them instead of realizing the power is within, and they just kind of throw in the towel and just kind of chug through life. And actually, something that prior to regarding, I mean, you were, did you say you were like 10 or 11 when you were meditating? I mean, you should tell people. I think that's fascinating. You know, you were definitely ahead. Like you were here before. Like at that age, to be meditating is incredible.
And you know, that's the thing. Like I can remember even, you know, finding yoga as well and going to some, you know, high school basement to go do yoga for the first time, and I actually got my mom to come with me. I guess I had, you know, read about it in the book and other books, and I tried doing it myself, and I was like, oh, look, there's a yoga class over here at the zoo. So I did. I took my mom to yoga for the first time, and we, you know, it was just like hatha yoga or whatever, but it was like, ah, oh, this is, I was meant to find this, you know. And my mom did yoga for a little bit, but yeah, it was something that became a sanctuary for me. And that's, I think, you know, when people hear that, you know, that age, they do get impressed by that. And it actually came full circle because I was an elementary teacher when I first started my career in education, and I use those techniques with the students because, you know, you have students that they're living with all, you know, they're still in that state. You know, they say that you know, being in meditation is like the theta state, right? The theta state of the brain waves that are just calm. It's like deep sleep or hypnosis. But you can achieve that if you're in meditation or even in a yoga flow sometimes with the breath. And so, you know, there's a way I started to look at it is that, you know, I had some students who, you know, maybe had several different labels already and they were like 8 years old, you know, but they had so much trauma going on in their lives, even currently, that they were unable to really control impulses. So I began to create like a emergency plan for them, each one based on what their situation was. So if, you know, I had some kids who were witnessing violence at home on a daily basis, so their immediate reaction, you know, I can remember the first time a boy tapped on another boy's shoulder in front of him to borrow a pencil, and the kid turned around and just hit him. So, you know, that's a reaction out of trauma. And so I'm like, okay, so how can we, you know, I found myself being like trying to, you know, use the tools that I did at that age and say, okay, if I have something happen, like a tap on the shoulder or someone calls my name, you know, and I feel any anxiety, you know, they're too young to understand, like, to try to look at where it comes from. No, but let's take a breath, you know. So I would just teach them a certain breath based on, you know, their age and their ability. And we'd make a little sheet and we'd put it right on their desk. So it would remind them, if I feel anxious or angry or any of these intense things that make me want to do something that is not good, how can I use just stopping and breathing? Or for some, the breath didn't work, so it was helping them visualize something happy that they could go to, a visualization, a guided visualization map for them. And you know what? It really cut down on the intensity of these interactions that were, you know, oftentimes so random. And by the time after it happened, they didn't even remember. They didn't necessarily even remember like what started it. All they could remember was the intensity of the emotion. And that's, you know, the idea of like, getting a handle on those emotions, because they're deeply rooted in some wounding events, you know, some events where they felt helpless, where they felt fear, or they felt unsafe. Because really the thing with that age of 0 to 7, children, babies, infants, right, they're all dependent. And every single thing they do, they're trying to be unconditionally loved. And they're not always getting the response that they want to have. And so that's where we see kids who fail to thrive. They don't respond or don't talk. I have a nephew who did not talk until like almost 4 and a half. And part of it was his mom was already struggling with 2 kids when she had him, and she was not very attentive to him. So he learned it doesn't work to cry. It doesn't work to cry to get her. So eventually he needed more work in how do I ask for something that I need, because he learned very early that I don't get it if I ask for it in the way that a baby asks, which is to cry. So, you know, it wasn't until later that we looked back that we could see kind of the roots of where that came in. And he, you know, is a functioning, highly functioning autistic man now, but that was his beginning. And so unless we can go in and tell those young parts of ourselves who are so there, they want to protect us, you know, and that's where the part of the training that I received was based on the psychologist that developed it. It's based on internal family systems therapy, which, you know, some people haven't heard of, but it's based on the idea that we have all these parts in us, and those younger parts can be running the show without us really knowing it. They can be so strong because we were, you know, neglected, or just, you know, and it doesn't have to be massive trauma. It just has to be that feeling that love was conditional at that time, feeling unsafe, whatever the experience was, you know, because people say to me, oh, well, you know, I didn't have childhood trauma, but really I didn't have any abuse per se. But it was the role that I took on, and it was the way that, you know, my family was, that I just, you know now that I'm a highly sensitive person. I had no choice but to take that on. You know, some people, you know, I had an older sister, and she just didn't acknowledge that any of it was going on. She just put her closed her door
she
and put her music
it
on.
To you, like you.
Yeah. And so, you know, we don't have a close relationship because, you know, I'm sure like she judges the way I did it or whatever. And, you know, we just are very, very different. But I didn't feel that I had a choice. And I think that, you know, this rise of autism and all of this, I think a lot of it has to do with these situations where, like I said, just not being seen, just not being heard, just not being unconditionally loved is enough to really create these parts of us that, you know, they're never going to leave us. Those are our memories, right? But we can engage with them through just like a guided meditation and say, you know, parts, I love you, I appreciate you, but I don't need you to be driving the bus anymore. Like I understand why you protected me this way, why you still want to, but I've got this, and you can get in the back seat. You know, literally just, it's like you said, you know, you have a realization, but our statements and what we say to ourselves about ourselves, they create our reality. So if all we do is just focus on what's not working, how, you know, mom never listens or whatever it is, it just creates more of that. But if we want to create something different, we've got to change how we think about it, how our parts manage it subconsciously, and then how we speak about it. And I tell people this, like from being an educator, 21 days of doing something consistently is one of the best ways to create change. You know, everybody wants it like this. No, our brain needs repetition, and you can create a new habit. Some people, it's only 7 days or a few days, but most people need that repetition. Same time, same place, 10 minutes commitment, whatever it is, of breath, clearing the mind, And then having a statement that you want to create, like, I am the powerful creator of my life. You know, I'm not giving my power over to other people. I always encourage it to be in the positive, not in the negative. But you help them get to a place where it's like, now that you see that this part is going to stand down, this protector, this, you know, advocate for you, what do you really want to create? And so that's the journey that has developed since I created Rock Your Blocks. I really worked more in health and fitness when I retired from that that career. And I found that people were getting stuck with health and fitness goals. Why? Because that's created in your conscious mind, right? Your conscious mind is not really in charge all the time. So then people go, oh yeah, I want to do that. Oh, that's perfect. I understand my macros and, you know, this is what I'm going to do. Here's the plan. And I would see them in a week and they'd be like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I can't get started. And they're right there. You could hear it in the language. You know, there's something deep down in them that's preventing them from moving forward on it. And it's that self-doubt. It's that negative self-talk. Maybe they were shamed about food when they were a kid. Maybe they were fed when they were sad. So it's now a comfort thing. You know, we have these relationships with food and with, you know, drinking or any kind of habit like that. So a lot of times I realize, you know what, this needs to be a deeper tool. So some of my clients that I get now, it is a health goal. It's a, I don't want to age. That's another good one, because we associate aging with degradation, with going downhill. Everybody talks that way. Well, the fact is there's plenty of people walking around the planet that are aging very healthily. And why? Because they're listening to their bodies. They're saying positive things. They're, oh, my arm feels a little stiff. Oh, maybe you need to stretch some more. You know, I can't tell you, like, I have almost perfect health, knock on wood, but it's all been in my mind. It's all been not looking at it that way. I mean, for several years, I was just fearing aging and the changes that come with it, you know, but it really is possible to create anything that you want in your life. So
it's the story you tell, because I mean, especially with what you just mentioned there, so many people, like, you see some people, like, when they're 30, they're acting like they're 60 or 70. And you'll see some people, they're 70 and they're acting like they're 30. And I mean, I know, I mean, I just turned 51 and I'm in better condition than I was in my 30s, because I don't take any medication. I go to the, I look after myself. I'm in tune. I make sure that if I feel something out that's off alignment, straight away, I get it right. And I go, okay, there's something off here. But was I like that in my 30s? No. Was I like that in my 40s? Probably not.
And you know, and that's the thing, is that, you know, some younger people will come to me and they have an amazing, like, I have a client who's the daughter of another client, and she's, you know, a junior in college. She is so loving this subconscious healing, because what she's able to figure out, she was the youngest of five and they were all brothers. So she's starting to realize that she's people pleasing around her college friends. And she's just an amazing young woman. And she's doubting, like, whether this person likes me, or, you know, like, she's finding herself saying yes when she wants to say no, just simple things, right? So when we hear people pleasing, sometimes we characterize people as that, but it's behaviors, and they can creep up very slowly and they can build over time. So even a young person could be like, oh my gosh, she, through subconscious healing one-on-one session, she said, oh, the insights, you know, because I'll talk to her and then I'll go and say, okay, I'm going to talk to your subconscious mind now. And I'll use this neuro-linguistic programming to sort of ask her parts to, you know, respectfully quiet down and understand and all of this. And then I wait and I use my intuition to notice if that work is complete or if it needs more time, or sometimes a little bit of tapping or assistance, you know, energy healing. And she comes back and I'll say, okay, any insights? How are you feeling? And she says, I had the biggest insight. I realized that being the youngest, I was always chasing after my brothers. I was always trying to not be forgotten. I was trying to fit in and be included. And so I think that's coming up when I'm around this group, this hiking group or this group. And she said, wow, and so it really doesn't matter what your age is. It's so amazing to learn the tools because once you learn them, you can literally, you start to understand these statements and that you can wake up in the middle of night with overthinking, anxious thoughts, and you can talk to your parts. You can say, hey, I use this one all the time, so I'll share it. I say, hey, racing thoughts, quiet down. I need some more sleep, and when appropriate, and then I'll do my little command. And it sometimes takes a few times. I can even say it in my head. I don't even have to say it out loud, and I fall back to sleep. But if you allow that, and some people say there's like a 15-second rule, I don't know about that. I think it depends on the person. But like if you go on a negative thought path, then it's pretty hard to turn it around after that amount of time. Well, I definitely see that with myself, but I've turned it around even after a few minutes of it. You wake up, you go to the bathroom, and you're like, I really want to sleep. It's 3 in the morning, something like that. So, that's your subconscious, right? Because you are sleeping, so your subconscious is dreaming, it's doing all of these things. But I know for sure that I still have those anxious parts. I still have those worried about the future parts. And if they come up, so I teach people that work with me in groups or in individually, I give them these simple commands. And a lot of times we'll end the session with an I am statement. I'll say, okay, now that we've done this, how are you feeling? And of course, I want them to have a better feeling than they started. And then it's like, all right, what do you want to create between now and the next time? What do you want to do? And we generally use an I am statement. And we pull up something, like I am able to set a boundary with ease or whatever it is. Sometimes I need more help than others. Sometimes it comes right out of their mouth. And then we'll give some, subconscious commands, we call it, or statements that will help them really cement that. And what it does, it's not magic, but it's literally just giving another message in there to your subconscious that says, next time when that situation presents itself, you have some other thoughts about it. You're not just going on autopilot. You're like looking at it and saying, I can say no. And just, you know what, I got to get home and study. I have a paper due tomorrow, whatever the case may be. But it just provides another option for your mind to go to rather than the automatic response.
And because I know we were kind of talking prior to recording as well, the way, like, sometimes, say, in a relationship, like, because I know in my generation, most of the women, they basically stayed at home, looked after the children and everything. And then when the children move out, they're finding themselves, they're kind of lost. So if somebody's in that place, what's the best thing that they can be doing to kind of, instead of feeling hopeless?
Yeah, so I mean, this is where I feel, starting with the mindfulness. I mean, I think most of the folks that are into working with subconscious healing, you have to have an open mind to learning something new, right? And there's certainly a number of different new kinds of healing these days, right? There's, psychedelic therapies. There's all these regression things you could do if you feel that that's something from your past. But what I would say is begin somewhere with the mindfulness. Begin somewhere with a way to bring yourself some inner peace. Whether it's, when I first started, I was working with like the sounds, like oming and things like that. And I felt the vibration really helped me to relax. So I tell people this, do something like Insight Timer or one of these apps. There's a million of them now, right? Where you can go on there and just search by how you feel in the morning. So I highly recommend something like that. Like just try them out. And just in the morning, you wake up, you feel anxious, type in anxiety. There's going to be somebody who created a beautiful guided meditation for anxiety. And sometimes in the beginning, listening to someone talk about it and maybe offer some breath, offer some visualization. It's like there's a buffet out there for us now when it comes to meditation. So I would say the first step is to try to tune into yourself. If you're struggling with that, you can certainly work with a coach that can help you, right? One-on-one. But most of the time, if you do it that way, you'll find things that resonate with you. Like right now, my biggest thing is sound healing. But I do really feel like when we create sound within ourselves, like just the sound of Om. This morning I did one where I did all of the sounds of the chakras in a row, like for 10 minutes. It was amazing, just being, doing Ram and Vam and just going through that and, 12 minutes of that. So, listening to even just listening to binaural beats or something like that, it can be soothing to the brain. And for people that are just, I just don't know if I can do this meditation thing, just find a sound, just do a white noise sound even, because what you're trying to do is stop all of that noise of the subconscious patterns so that you can get to really what you are, who you are, and what you want in life. And I think that's the biggest thing when, women, like you said, they are either divorced or maybe they just retired and they just feel so lost. The chances are good that they came out of the generation like you and I did that was very traditional. And now here we are in this world of, there's infinite possibility, but that leads to infinite confusion, right? And sometimes, especially after pandemic, I found even myself, moved out of LA because it just was really hard being in LA during the pandemic. But being able to find new friends, especially if you move somewhere, actually considered moving, to another country, it's overwhelming. And so that's where, working with somebody who can help you to dig deeper if you are struggling with, really identifying who you are and what you want. And so that's why I call it soul alignment guide, because I feel like sometimes our soul's desires get so buried under all of this stuff in life. And of course, the older that you are, the more decades that it's been in place. So, experiencing something like imposter syndrome is very much like this, because it's like, you'll talk to someone and they'll be like, what I really love to do is, write. And I just don't know how to get started with it. Well, why? All of these thoughts in your head saying, oh, well, it's been years since you've written anything, or, all of the doubts will come up. And so to me, it's that opportunity of saying, like, how can I understand where those doubts are coming from? How can I neutralize that? So I would say meditation, consistency, and working with someone who can help you, find these other tools, certainly try some different things. But I found a lot of the traditional, talk therapies and all of that, I was doing it even in fact during the pandemic. And I just said, this is just not working for me anymore. I don't want to talk about the same things again and again and again. I actually found that doing that and doing more traditional work like that, even different forms of cognitive, psychotherapy, it can create more of the same. I found myself more depressed doing that therapy because I was just reviewing all the negative experiences. And I was like, this isn't what I want, And it wasn't until I actually met a coach who, I was looking for girlfriends. I literally, because of the pandemic, had like, a lot of my friends are East Coast. I'm from New York. And so I just kind of lost touch with people. And I met this girl, just on an online forum. There's how the universe has our backs. She was a certified subconscious healer. And so, I didn't even talk to her about it until a few months into our friendship. And then she said, oh yeah, I do this style in my coaching. She's also an intuitive life coach, but she added this to her sort of toolkit and introduced me to it. And after about 4 weeks of doing it, I learned so much about myself and the parts that had really still had a hold on me, which I thought I had done all that work. You can have the conscious realization of what happened in your life, but it doesn't necessarily change how you behave. And you know, that's really based on the fact that like 90% of the time it's our subconscious programming that's running the show. It's really powerful. And so, you know, consciously we can understand the heck out of it, but it doesn't change anything. So 4 weeks into doing it personally, I probably was doing a session a day, 30 to 90 minutes a day. And I said, I've got to get certified in this because I could see how somehow I was meant to meet her, somehow that came together. And I was really feeling like I didn't want to do nutrition and fitness coaching anymore because people were not being successful. And my success rate prior to the pandemic was like almost 100%. You know, even the people with blocks, like they were able to, there was so much support and help. But all the support and help in the world doesn't help if your subconscious mind is working against you based on, you know, these negative patterns. You know, they're all patterns of disempowerment, patterns of, you know, of feeling unloved and unworthy. And, you know, one of the last clients I had, and because I used to work with people who, you know, had a weight management issue, but typically it was, you know, turning into either pre-diabetes or diabetes. And I was, you know, sort of became the person who, if you don't want to go on all these drugs, you can do it naturally, you know. So I have a whole YouTube channel for that because, again, it's that passion for wanting to help people see they have the power to change and create the life that they want. And to be able to help people reverse diabetes, like full-blown diabetes reversed, their blood work numbers in 2, 3 months just completely in the, you know, gone into the right direction. And it's so, you know, and that's again, you know, how are you thinking about it? How are you framing it? I'd have people call me and say, yeah, I'm doing this and that, but I don't want to change anything I'm eating. And I'm like, okay. So you're telling me you want the end result, but you don't want to change, you know? So when I started to see all that, I realized I need to morph this into something bigger, something where I could help people beyond health and wellness, which is still a great passion for me. I do feel like you said, I mean, if I compare where I was and how I felt when I was 30 to now, I feel invincible now. You know, it's crazy. I mean, I work out 5, 6 days a week. When I'm not working out, I'm stretching. You know, I incorporate that into my life, and I believe that we are all experiences are meant for us to, you know, to happen. It's what we do with it, you know, going forward. So that's what I would say is meditation, habit, you know. Some people can get there using hypnosis, but I feel like hypnosis is kind of like very old school version of working with the subconscious. You know what I mean? Like I don't feel like we need to go to that level. And I think there's so much fear around loss of control that it just doesn't seem like a path I would really recommend to women, you know, like to give over your consciousness. It's not necessary. We can talk to our subconscious just by being relaxed, you know. So my recommendation is to meditate, get in that state. In fact, I start most of my sessions with some breath, maybe a little seated, you know, yoga nidra, and then we go into the session. Some of my clients, because I work on Zoom, will actually lie down once we start the session, you know, and I'll just tell them, if you fall asleep, I'm just going to keep going and working with your subconscious. So don't worry if you wake up and the screen is gone. You know, don't worry, I'll complete it because you don't need to be awake for it, but you need to be comfortable and relaxed. So.
And just finally, because you mentioned about the mantras, like, because I know it's the vibration when you do the mantra. Do you have to do it out loud, or can you actually say it to yourself? Do you still get the vibration effect, or must it actually be vocal?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that, you know, I have actually done you know, the 108, you know, where you have the beads and all of that. I think you can go into doing it internally. I don't think that it's a problem. I do feel like though it's good to start it out loud because it sets that vibration going in your body. That's shift to me. And that's where, you know, when people say after 15 seconds you can't change something, I'm like, I don't know about that. Because if I just use a simple humming, I'll even tell people that, like, if we're doing a group session, I'll like throw a question out there to get some maybe emotion or resistance come up. And I'll just say to people, just close your eyes for a moment and just hum internally. The vibration, 'cause sometimes break up some negative things that were going on in their head, that vibration alone, I mean, that's a whole other thing. I would love to get, certified in sound healing. Like I have some sound bowls that I play with, but and I also use a lot of those types of backgrounds to my meditations, using solfeggio and using binaural and all of that kind of stuff, theta. And I do believe that the vibration has the power to increase your ability to get to that meditative state. So I do think starting off with the sound is good. But of course, to me, sometimes I'll do it internally and it's just as effective. But wow, when you do it aloud, even if it's just softly, it's almost like a reset to the system, and there's so many people now who are like somatic experts and all of that. And I did teach trauma yoga for a little while, so I know about some of the activities that are used to calm the vagus nerve, and some of them are just that, like literally a humming sound. And you might be familiar with the bumblebee breath. That's one of my favorites. The bumblebee breath is covering the ears. It doesn't work well with the headset on, but covering the ears, covering the eyes, and just humming. And it's like you're taking away certain senses, so you overly focus on the humming and you just are buzzing. It only takes a few rounds of that to just reset yourself. So, I tell people this, like, it doesn't, I love having a habit and routine you do at the same time in the same place every day. I think that matters. And I intentionally do that when I wake up in the morning. But before bed is an option. But also just stopping in the middle of the day if something negative happened and just going somewhere where you can have the privacy to just calm your mind, take some breaths, So breathing in for three, holding for three, breathing out for three, holding for three. It can just put you back in that situation, like refreshed, So just simple tools any time of the day. But yeah, I think it's a good way to start with mantra is to do it out loud, and then you can progress into, silently or verbally, internally.
Excellent. Listen, Denise, thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. You might let people know where they can find you.
Yeah, so for now, just go to Rock Your Blocks and you can find out about this new Soul Alignment Collective course that I'm starting up soon. And get some other information and resources, get onto my email list. And I publish articles, audio meditations, and I have a YouTube channel also for guided meditations. So when you go to my website, you'll find links to all of that. And yeah, hopefully I can connect with you on one of those channels.
Excellent. I'll make sure I'll put the links both on the audio and the video. And also, you were kind enough to give me a meditation as well, which will go out after the interview so people will get familiar with you. And I'll have all the links to your YouTube channel. So if they like the style, they can start following you and everything. So thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you. It's my pleasure.
So that's all for the meditation podcast. You'll find all our episodes at meditationpodcast.org. Until next week, take care. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, and share with your friends. And you'll find all my shows with the QR code or bio.link/podcaster, as well as my podcast coaching. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com, helping people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. Also, if you'd like to go on a podcasting tour, I can help you do that. And if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me on my bio.link/podcaster. Until next week, take care.